So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Particularly glad to have you along today as we begin our program by talking with you about riverine wetlands. And you may or may not know that here in Wisconsin, we have about 32,000 miles of perennial streams and rivers, and we have hundreds of thousands of acres of pretty diverse wetland habitats associated with these waterways. And we're going to be talking about riverine wetlands today with you, with our two guests, Laura Englund, with me in the studio. Laura is Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, located here in Madison. With us by phone today, Carrie St. Pay is Executive Director of the Barataria-Terrebonne National Estuary Program, and it includes the interface of the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. And Carrie is the banquet speaker for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association 12th Annual Wetland Science Forum. It's going to be held February 1st and 2nd at the Radisson Hotel and Convention Center in La Crosse, and we'll certainly talk a bit about that forum as well and how you might get involved in it, as well as all of the other people who have already signed up for it. Certainly, if you have questions as we talk riverine wetlands, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. We'd be glad to take your comments and your questions. And Carrie St. Pay, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Larry.
And Laura Englund, great to have you back as well.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
You know, Laura, maybe you could start by giving us a little better definition or example of riverine wetlands.
Well, sure. If you hear someone talking about that wet spot down by the creek, they're talking about riverine wetlands. But in sort of a more formal sense, riverine wetlands are those wetlands that are associated with and tightly linked to flowing waters of all sizes, from tiny headwater streams down to our large floodplain rivers like the Wisconsin River and Mississippi River. And so riverine wetland habitats can be found in valleys alongside streams and rivers, in backwaters and sloughs and floodplains. And there are also marshy and swampy islands in the middle of large rivers like the Mississippi River. And they're really important in our landscapes because of the connections and functions that they provide. They're very tightly linked with streams and rivers, and through these connections help maintain the health of streams and rivers by filtering out pollution from runoff, by storing floodwaters to prevent downstream flooding. And they also provide, as corridors along streams and rivers, provide really important connections for wildlife. Mm-hmm. Wildlife that are moving through our landscapes, across our landscapes, use these corridors of really high-quality wetland habitat for migration. And an example is waterfowl migration. About 40% of the ducks in North America and other waterfowl use the Mississippi Flyway for migration purposes, and they're stopping along the way and making use of riverine wetland habitat. So it's really important.
Important not only in Wisconsin, but elsewhere as well. And certainly Carrie's work is focused on an effort to preserve and restore, what is it, about 4 million acre area?
That's correct, 4.2 million acres. And we're in a wetland system that is at the other end of the Mississippi River. So we certainly have riverine wetlands, but much of our wetland system is classified as estuarine, meaning that we have influences from the Gulf of Mexico.
And you've spent a good lot of your professional life working to restore this area and rebuild it, and it's had its problems, hasn't it?
Oh, we certainly have our problems, Larry. My career spans 32 years, and of course I was born and raised here too. And we've had problems that have begun with the levying of the Mississippi River, which was actually responsible for building the wetland system that we have here.
And hurricanes probably haven't helped matters any in some parts of the of those 4 million acres.
Well, hurricanes have been a part of our climate and our ecosystem, for as long as there's been, weather here, which has been forever. And certainly Katrina and Hurricane Rita really caused a lot of damage here, and we're just had that added destruction that we are having to consider now.
And, you know, Laura, we've got talking with Kerry here about his work. How does it relate to, and he's the banquet speaker for your forum. How does his work relate to what you're doing here? It's a little different.
Well, we're connected by the Mississippi River. The Mississippi River Basin is the biggest in the U.S. It drains portions of 31 states, including most of our state. And the way that we care for the land and waters and wetlands here in our end of the basin affects not just the health of the upper Mississippi River, but also the quality and quantity of water that's flowing downstream to the Gulf. And so we feel that we have a role to play here in the long-term protection and restoration of wetlands of the Mississippi Delta. So we want our audience at our conference to learn more about Kerry's work.
And Kerry, I'm sure you're happy to know that there are people working on that up on this end.
I sure am, and we are definitely connected. I mean, even just the waterfowl that Laura was talking about earlier, you know, we're at the receiving end of, you know, what we call the duck factories up north, where a lot of the waterfowl nest, and we're at the other end of their migratory patterns. And, of course, the water quality, you know, all the water that's generated up there and all the influences, nutrients or whatever, that all ends up down here. So, yes, we're definitely connected.
If you were going to pick a point or two, I might ask you both this question, sort of a problem area or problem areas, a couple of the most important things that you have to worry about. Kerry, I've turned to you first. What would they be?
Well, our you know, overwhelming issue down here in Louisiana is our wetlands are disappearing. Not so much through development. I mean, I recognize that that is the usual problem around the country, wetlands being developed, you know, turned into golf courses or whatever. Our wetland loss issue is that our wetlands are physically disappearing. They're sinking. The Barataria Terrebonne system is the fastest disappearing landmass on Earth, and currently we are losing wetlands. That's wetlands turning into open water at a rate of about 18 square miles per year, 18 square miles per year. And this has greatly impacted our communities. I mean, these wetlands, in addition to all the very valuable ecological services they provide, they also serve to protect our communities from such things as hurricane storm surges. And so when the wetlands disappear, our communities are completely vulnerable to these huge storm surges.
And this might be sound like a dumb question, but why are they sinking?
Well, it's a complicated process somewhat. They didn't just start sinking. Our wetlands have been sinking for, you know, eternity, as long as they've been here. And it's related to the just the subsidence and the weight of the incredible amounts of sediment that's coming down the Mississippi River. It's compacting, and so it's always been sinking. But that sinking has always been overwhelmed by the annual deposition of sediments from the river, sediments that come from Wisconsin, actually. But we've built these levees along the Mississippi River, and so it no longer overflows its banks and no longer offsets that natural subsidence. So now we just have the sinking. We don't have the building.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably not the major issue here, but maybe it is. Talk about what we're experiencing here, Laura.
Well, wetlands here are subject to a myriad of threats, but I would say wetland loss is probably the biggest issue that we deal with. Wetland loss here is currently most likely due, in most places in the state, due to development. Wisconsin used to have about 10 million acres of wetlands, and they're currently about 5 million. And so over the past 150 years, land conversion for things like agriculture and development resulted in the draining and filling of 5 million or so acres of wetlands. And what that means today is that those wetlands that are remaining are that much more important because of the functions and services that they provide, keeping our water clean, preventing floods, providing habitat for wildlife and recreational opportunities that have a real economic impact.
And, of course, then it also increases the problems down on Kerry's end as well.
Right.
Yeah, we have a lot of common links. I mean, wetlands, you know, the interest in with wetlands is that they're just incredibly productive systems, and they're just very valuable ecosystems, no matter where they are or how they were formed. our wetlands were formed in a little different way. We're a deltaic system here. But wetland loss is a problem, whether it's along the coast and estuaries or in riverine wetlands. It's a major national problem.
Mm. Well, I want to invite our listeners to join in. If you have a question for our guest today, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And we have a caller online, Susie in De Pere. We'll go to you. Susie, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning, and good morning, guests. Thank you so much for this program. Mm-hmm. This will make you happy, Laura. My question is about restoring riverine wetland. We have a hobby farm, and there is a trout feeder creek on this hobby farm in Waupaca County, actually. And it was used as cattle pasture for years, I do believe. And we want to restore it to its original environmental quality and plant life, et cetera. And we're looking for information with regard to how to do that and also how to determine what the limit of the riverine soil substructure is so that we know how much of it we can actually farm and where we should stop and protect that riverbed. And I'm on a cell phone, so I'll take my answer off here.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Well, this is wonderful. Susie, I'm so happy to hear your call. Wisconsin Wetlands Association, one of our big programs, is promoting restoration of wetlands throughout the state. And we have a really wonderful handbook that was written by co-authors Alice Thompson and Charles Luthen. It's a restoration handbook for Wisconsin landowners. And it is geared directly towards people like yourself who are interested in restoring wetland habitat on your own property. And it goes through sort of the basics of wetland ecology and what impacts you might be looking for and trying to reverse through a restoration project, and also provides information on resources, including funding programs that help private landowners who want to restore wetlands. So we'd love to get you a copy of that handbook. We also do wetland restoration workshops in the summertime, and that's something that you ought to look out for. But we'd love to provide you with some more information. So call our office at 608-250-9971 or visit our website, which is wisconsinwetlands.org.
And your number again was 608-255-9...
250-9971.
I'm sorry, 250-9971?
That's right.
9971. Or go to wisconsinwetlands.org and find the information you need, Susie. Thanks a lot for calling. That was a good call.
And we have some new web pages that were just posted in the past month or so that include a lot of information for landowners about wetland restoration. So that's a good place to start.
Okay. Thanks, Susie. Vicki in Winona, Minnesota, it's your turn now. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I'm wondering if Carrie could talk a little bit about hypoxia and nutrient pollution down on his end of the river and how land use practices up here in the upper Mississippi may be contributing to that.
Okay. Karen?
Sure. Be glad to. Yes, we do have an issue in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's known as the Gulf hypoxic zones. And hypoxia is a term that's used to apply to areas that are have low levels of dissolved oxygen. Of course, organisms in the sea and bodies of water need oxygen, dissolved oxygen, to survive. And what's happening in Mississippi River is Mississippi River accumulates a lot of nutrients, drains through the heart of the United States and actually drains two Canadian provinces. All that water comes down here, and anything it picks up is transported out into the Gulf. The nutrients fuel algae blooms, microscopic plants, and the fresh Mississippi River water flows over the saline Gulf of Mexico. The algae grows out there once the sediments settle out, make the water clear. They bloom and they die and they sink down. And there's a stratified layer out there in the Gulf of Mexico that we call this hypoxic zone. It's quite large. It's an area in the lower part of the water column that is extremely low and sometimes completely void of oxygen. And so it's a huge area in the Gulf of Mexico that is just not productive at all. And it's coming from the watershed. The data that we have suggests that most of the nutrients that are coming in the nutrient levels that are coming into Louisiana and the Mississippi River are equal to the amounts going out. So it's coming from the watershed. Not that we don't produce nutrients here. We mm-hmm. certainly do. But our drainage is away from the river, not into it. And so at least the nutrients that are in the Mississippi River are coming from up watershed from us. But anything that's done up in Wisconsin or Minnesota, in Ohio or Missouri is going to help us down here.
Yeah. Laura England, Outreach Programs Director with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, one of our guests, the other, Carrie St. Pei, Executive Director of the Barataria Terrebonne National Estuary Program, talking with them today about riverine wetlands. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking riverine wetlands today with Laura England and Carrie St. Pei. Glad to have you listening in. We have lots of callers online, so we'll go right back to the phones. And Jeff in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Well, I've been listening with great interest on this. And Carrie and Laura both have mentioned some of the restoration work on the river. Along the Wisconsin's border, we've been working now for over 20 years with the Environmental Management Program, restoring habitat on the Mississippi River, along with its wetlands within the floodplain. And my question is, do you see that these efforts that we are doing in Wisconsin, and actually these efforts are taking place all the way down to the mouth of the Ohio River, will they help alleviate in the long term potentially some of the problems that are being viewed down in the Delta, but also helping to absorb some of those watershed impacts?
Mm-hmm. Well, Carrie, I'll turn to you first and then to Laura.
Okay, great. The problem is enormous. So, and the way to attack it is exactly the way Jeff has mentioned. Up watershed. We need to return to the to using the benefits of wetlands, and in some cases that means rebuilding wetlands that are no longer there. Their ability to absorb these nutrients before they get down into this region, and so anything that is done to restore wetlands in the upper part of the watershed will help us down here. It's just got to be at a very big scale before we're going to actually notice, a decrease in the area of the hypoxia.
But somebody has to do it, and somebody has to start. And so, as you say, any little bit helps. Laura, a comment from you?
Well, I just would echo Carrie's comments that it really work has to be done in all parts of the basin, including Wisconsin. And Wisconsin really is playing a big role working with other states here in the upper Mississippi River Basin. In 1986, Congress declared the upper Mississippi River a nationally significant ecosystem. And in the two decades that have followed, there's been a tremendous multi-agency effort to restore riverine wetlands and other habitat within the upper Mississippi River corridor. And the agencies involved include the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Geological Survey, Fish and Wildlife Service, Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources, other state DNRs, and other partners. And as I understand it, there have been at least 17 large habitat restoration projects constructed in Wisconsin's waters of the Mississippi River in the past two decades. And that's resulted in restoration of more than 20,000 acres of aquatic and riverine wetland habitat. So there's a lot of work going on.
More needs to be done, and that's probably, just to talk about your forum a little bit, that's part of the purpose of your forum, I would expect.
Right, and this year we are going to be highlighting the Upper Mississippi River Corridor through a special session, and we have about 10 presenters who are going to be talking about work that's being done in the Upper Mississippi River, from water level management to restoration projects, and we hope that our conference will provide a forum for further discussion about what's been done so far, lessons learned, and what needs to be continued, and new things to try to restore the basin mm-hmm. and what's flowing downstream to the Delta.
And before I forget about it, anybody can attend this conference, and how do people find out more information on it?
I'm glad you asked. Well, yes, it's open to the public. The conference is attended by wetland professionals and just wetland enthusiasts. And you can learn more about our conference on our website at wisconsinwetlands.org. We are taking registration up through Monday ahead of time, and then people can register at the door in La Crosse at the Radisson Hotel. And I would particularly invite members of the public and community in the La Crosse area to consider attending the banquet, which is going to be a dinner and presentation by Carrie on the evening of next Thursday, February 1st. And that is open to the general public, and people can call our office at 608-250-9971 if they'd like to purchase a ticket.
Okay, 608-250-9971. And Carrie, you'll be talking, I assume, about your work.
Yes, and gee, I do hope there's a lot of wetlands professionals, but also enthusiasts. I love talking to people who, you know, love wetlands and want to see them restored. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Jeff, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Mary in Woodstock, Illinois, it's your turn next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Excellent program. Outstanding, especially when we hear about the interrelatedness between Wisconsin and New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And my question, which in part has already been answered, was the interrelatedness in so many of our major waterways, whether it's the Colorado River, whether it's the Mississippi River, or we're talking about the Great Lakes. And while we know we have EPA, what other organizations are looking at these issues of the quality of our water and its interrelatedness across state borders on a national level?
Carrie, do you want to address that?
Sure, sure. Well, one of the major federal agencies that does that routinely is NOAA. They of course look at the mostly the coastal regions, but I mean the caller made an excellent point. You know, we have different states, and these are all really political boundaries. These issues that we have really are those of watershed level. In other words, you know, the whole region that is drained by any river in particular, the people who live on the bottom are affected by the people who live upstream. I mean, really, really, it's really factual that we really are all connected. And you really do have to address these things on, you know, just a watershed level basis. But, yes, EPA, NOAA, you know, U.S. Geological Survey, I mean, we use these agencies frequently, and they're strong partners. And they all have a role to play.
Laura, comment from you?
Yeah, I would just add to that there are hundreds and thousands of organizations that focus on water resources across the country with different geographic scopes to the work that they do, and some focus on wetlands, some focus on rivers, some focus on lakes. But many of these organizations, and I can speak in, for Wisconsin in particular, work together. In Wisconsin, we have a strong tradition of partnering with other conservation organizations, the River Alliance of Wisconsin, the Association of Lakes, and other organizations that are concerned about water resources, because as Mary said, they're all very much connected. They're connected to groundwater as well, and we have to work together to protect the resources that we're interested in.
Yeah. Mary, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Ron in Madison, we turn to you next. Ron, good morning. Ron, are you there? Hello, Ron. We may have lost Ron. Ron, are you there? Well, I think we...
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
In the 20th century, I was a soil scientist, and I do appreciate all the great work that federal and state agencies have done to save the soil and water. But I want to point out, since you're talking about southern Louisiana and Wisconsin, that very little sand and gravel gets down the Mississippi River. During the 20th century, humans, mainly Corps of Engineers and other federal agencies, have built dozens, hundreds of large dams on the main streams at tributaries to the Mississippi, thousands of smaller dams, and there are millions of farm ponds. All of these catch the gravel and most of the sand. So the question is, can anybody compare the sediment load during the 1993 flood, the big flood of 93, how much sediment got past those locks and dams on the Mississippi River, and how much of it got down to Louisiana? If we do, I see two choices. One, we either destroy the big dams on the Missouri, the Tennessee, the White River, the Arkansas, et cetera, and let the sand and gravel replenish southern Louisiana, or we just kiss Louisiana goodbye. Everything south of Interstate 10 and 12 will be reclaimed by the ocean, especially if we don't stop global warming and let sea level continue to rise. So can you contrast 1993 Mississippi River flood with the floods during the 1800s, 1845, 1888, whichever years it was? How little sand and gravel is washed down the Mississippi? How much? And while you're going to be near La Crosse, please stop in Vernon County and look at the flood-controlled dams on the Kickapoo River. The west branch of the Kickapoo River has a small watershed project. It's great for flood control, but it catches all the gravel, most of the sand, and it below dams like that, the natural processes eat out the sand out of the riverbeds and shuffle it around. In a few centuries, we will have no sand left in the Mississippi below the dams.
All right. Carrie St. Pay, comment.
Yeah, great. Yeah, you're making some excellent, excellent points. And these are the issues exactly that we deal with. You're absolutely right. The locks and dams along the Mississippi River have greatly reduced the sediment load coming down to Louisiana. In fact, the science that we have shows that the sediment load in the Mississippi River has declined by 80% since 1850. I don't know the figures, difference between 93 and other years, but since 1850, 80% reduction, and that's directly resultant of the dams and locks and dams. Now, still, though, the Mississippi River does transport a lot of sediments. The current data is that there's 100 million metric tons that's transported down the Mississippi, and it is shunted out into the open Gulf of Mexico off the continental shelf because the delta has built out to the edge of that continental shelf. So we're losing all that sediment. And even if the river actually had a huge sediment load, the levee construction has kept and is keeping the river from overflowing and replenishing the sediments. So, I mean, those are the issues that we deal with. And because of the changes in our use over time, our inner wetland system inside of the Gulf has become gradually saline over the years, and the uses have changed. In other words, now we're growing oysters in areas that 300 years ago was completely fresh water. So the degree of change that we're going to be able to force on people today is it's going to be limited because there would be great resistance among certain stakeholders. They could be actually wiped out if we try to over-freshen the system once again. But really, we don't want to do that anyway because the sediment load, as you indicated, is just not in the river anymore. But we can harvest the bed load of the river, and that's what we're proposing now. Mm.
Thanks for calling, Ron. Appreciate it. If you'd like to join in with your own questions or comments, we have some open lines so we can get you on fairly quickly now. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And, Ron, again, thanks. Gene and Ashland, your turn. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Hi. The other day I heard on the radio that New Orleans is in danger of returning to what it was at the time of the first explorers and settlers there, beginning of the country. That was that it was infested with mosquitoes, spreading yellow fever and malaria, and I suppose nowadays we could add West Nile and encephalitis. What ever made it safe, and what is endangering it now? I think it's a terrible thing to have people return there to live.
Of course, mosquitoes have been part of our lives for forever, and still are, and were even before the hurricane. The story of New Orleans is really the story of the whole region of southeast Louisiana. I know most people outside of our state are hearing mostly about New Orleans, and I can understand that because it's a major metropolitan area. But the services in New Orleans and the people have yet to move back. We're still undergoing. We have great need still, and it's incredible. I could talk about it all day, but you wouldn't. I couldn't transmit to you just how bad it is without seeing it. And so the services, you know, any mosquito control endeavors that were happening before the hurricane, I mean, none of those services are back. A lot of the people aren't back, and there's trapped water everywhere, breeding mosquitoes. So this has been a terrible mosquito year. But it will be years before this South Louisiana, actually, an entire South Louisiana, recovers from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita.
Mm. Thank you, Gene, for calling. Sarah in Lake Geneva, it's your turn next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm suffering from laryngitis, so excuse me for a moment. But I'm wondering what your guests are doing to combat the chemicals that are being put into the water system, specifically the 2,4-D chemicals, which are in a lot of your lawn fertilizer. 2,4-D is a horrible chemical that has been outlawed in Washington State around the salmon spawning areas because it kills off the fish, and yet in some places in Wisconsin, they're dumping it straight into water. It is also known to sit in the watershed. It doesn't get broken down through the soil. It is one of the most frequent chemicals found in the watershed, and it's also was the main chemical in Agent Orange. So I'm wondering what exactly they're doing in Mississippi, around the Mississippi, which has a lot of your lawns and farmers, and how they're combating that chemical and chemicals in general.
Okay. Well, Laura, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, this is an important issue that Sarah raises. You know, we've talked about wetland loss already, but wetlands are in the state subject to just a number of other threats, including runoff with pollution, and including toxic chemicals like pesticides. And it's, you know, a threat that we're still trying to get a handle on as an organization, how important it is, where in the state it's most important, and where it's having the biggest impacts. We're in the process of doing a wetland threats analysis for the entire state that will then inform our organization's work in the future for education and outreach and pushing for better policies to protect wetlands. And we'll be using the results of that analysis to work with partner agencies and organizations to work for better protection of wetlands. And I'm sure that lawn chemicals will be an issue that we'll be addressing in the future. So thanks for raising that.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie, you wanted to add anything to that?
Yeah. We're talking about a classification of pollutants that are known as a non-point source pollutants. You know, there are regulatory schemes that programs that came about with the passage of the Clean Water Act in 1972. But that's mainly directed to what we call point source discharges, you know, pollutants or effluents that coming out of a end of a pipe. These non-point source issues are harder to get a hold of because there really is no regulatory scheme. I mean, these are pollutants that wash off our lawns and off agricultural regions and don't necessarily come out of a pipe. And, you know, that's, you know, all the efforts to address those are, I think, exclusively voluntary. And so there are a lot of it's being attacked by the application of such things as what we call best management practices, building, you know, buffer zones along streams to keep the pollutants from going directly, you know, forcing them to pass through a wetland system so a lot of these pollutants can be extracted out of the runoff.
Thanks again, Sarah, for your call. And we'll go to Jessica next in Valders for her comments. Hi, Jessica.
Hello. I'm calling because I would like to get an address to which I can write to Laura England. I have been, in the past, have been growing wetland restoration plants and have recently moved to this side of the state, the eastern side of the state. And I'm anxious to be put in touch with people or organizations over here who are doing restorations. That I would just like to get her address for writing. I don't have internet access.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Thank you for calling, Jessica. It's 222 South Hamilton Street, Suite 1 in Madison, 53703. We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Now repeat that once more.
It's 222 South Hamilton Street, Suite number 1 in Madison, 53703.
Okay. And your number is 608 850-9971. So that'd be another way, I guess, to do it as well.
Absolutely.
And you'd look forward to hearing from Jessica, I'll bet.
We sure would.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go back to the, for a couple of minutes, to the Wetland Science Forum. Tell us again, what are the dates and what all is going to be going on?
The conference is next Thursday and Friday, February 1st and 2nd in La Crosse. And the conference is going to be opening with a session, plenary session, where I'll be together. Our keynote speaker is going to be Dan McGinnis from National Audubon Society's Upper Mississippi River Campaign. And he's going to be talking about the upper end of the basin. And as we've already discussed, our banquet speaker on the evening of February 1st will be Carrie St. Pay. And throughout the rest of the conference, we're going to be hearing from presenters from around Wisconsin and around the Midwest. We have 9 or 10 states represented amongst our presenters and participants. We're going to be hearing about wetland restoration projects, ecosystem services provided by riverine wetlands. We're going to be learning about biodiversity of riverine wetlands, how to use science and statute and savvy to protect Wisconsin's wetlands, a whole range of topics related to riverine wetlands. And at the end, we'll be going out for a few field trips to some local riverine wetland sites.
And obviously professionals will be there, but also a whole lot of people who are not necessarily professionals, but really interested in wetlands.
Right. It'll be a good mix.
And is there a cost for the forum?
I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I believe it's $115 for both days for members of our organization and $145 for non-members.
Okay.
And then the banquet tickets are $35 for general public.
Okay. And you can find out some more by going to the website as well, wisconsinwetlands.org, tell you about the forum, and it will also give you a lot of information about the about your own organization, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate both of you being with us today. Carrie St. Pay, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Larry.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure to talk with you, and always a pleasure to talk with you, Laura. Thank you so
much. Thank you for having me.
Laura England is Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Carrie St. Pay, Executive Director of the Barataria-Terrebonne National Estuary Program, and they will both, of course, be at the Wetland Science Forum, February 1st and 2nd, Radisson Hotel and Convention Center in La Crosse. Go to that website, wisconsinwetlands.org, and you'll find out some more information about how you can get involved. And I think for the banquet, though, you do have to phone in, if I'm not mistaken, phone in for a banquet ticket. I bet you Carrie's got a great presentation. And the number for that is area code 608-250-9971. Thanks again to both of you. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about recycling computers and other older information technology equipment here in Wisconsin. We're doing it, and we could probably be doing more of it. We'll be visiting with a couple of guests. Coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.